fridge in the cabinet above the electric kettle. Pulling out a box of tea, he handed it to me, saying, "Here, make 2 cups of this. I'll be right back. I've got an idea." He strode out of the kitchen, making a face as he swallowed hard, trying to get the taste of that tea out of his mouth. I did the same. I should have known anything that smelled so bad would taste worse. Again, I filled and started the electric kettle. Gage had given me a box of decaffeinated English breakfast. I wondered what his plan was. Decaf English breakfast wouldn't be my first choice to cure insomnia. I usually drank a chamomile-based blend that was supposed to be relaxing. It wasn't bad, but it didn't do much to help me sleep. Gage was back a minute later, a bottle of whiskey in his hand. He went to the pantry and returned with a jar of honey. "Tell me that's not your brother's whiskey," I said, eyeing the bottle cautiously. Just a few weeks ago, Charlie Winter's fiancé, Lucas Jackson, had stopped by to ask Aiden's blessing for his proposal to Charlie, and after receiving it, had made off with Aiden's best bottle of whiskey. Though apparently that had actually been his second best bottle, his best bottle had been stolen by Charlie 6 months before. Aiden Winters was not easygoing on the best of days, and he was not happy about losing 2 bottles of expensive liquor. Secretly, I thought it was funny, and suspected that deep down he might too. But I was an employee. The last thing I wanted was to get caught raiding the liquor cabinet. Gage turned the bottle over in his hands, and his lips quirked up. "I heard about that," he said. "It'll be a while before he finds something good enough to replace the bottle Lucas took. This is just the company whiskey from the library. I usually try not to drink when I can't sleep, but I don't think tea alone can scrape the taste of Amelia's tea off my tongue."
"Good point," I said. I watched as he poured hot water over the tea bags in our mugs, added a generous dollop of honey to each, and a much bigger slug of whiskey than I would have. Almost to myself, I said, "I don't usually drink when I can't sleep either. I'm not much of a drinker anyway, and I'm up almost every night."
I trailed off. "I know what you mean," Gage said. "It feels like asking for trouble. Because if it works,
then you're just trading insomnia for a drinking problem," I finished. Gage nodded, his blue eyes meeting mine in understanding and sympathy. He gave a final stir to my mug and handed it over, still cautious after the last sip of tea. I took a careful taste. Whiskey was not my favorite drink, by far, but the thick honey and familiar English breakfast smoothed the edges just enough. It was delicious, and even better, the bite of the whiskey washed the taste of Amelia's tea from my mouth. Heaven.
"Have you always had insomnia?"
Gage asked. I looked up to see his eyes on me, measuring and curious. I didn't want to answer. Alone with him in the dark and cozy kitchen, sipping the tea he'd made, I'd been lulled into a sense of safety. I didn't realize how far my guard was down until I heard myself say, "No, I was always a good sleeper. My mom used to say I was sleeping through the night at 2 months old.
"Me too," Gage said. "I got even better in the army. Nothing teaches you to catch sleep where you can like the army."
He took a sip of tea and looked at me over the rim of his mug.
"We both know why I can't sleep. What about you? How long have you had trouble sleeping?"
How to answer that question? Was there any way I could tell the truth without giving away too much? Stalling, I took another sip of the tea.
"Sophie?"
Gage asked. He was being nosy, and I could have told him it was none of his business, but I could hear the concern in his voice. Maybe the whiskey loosened my tongue, because I said, "It started after I got married." Gage's eyes went hard and flashed to my left hand. I knew what he was looking for, and I said, "He's dead. He died in a car accident almost 2 years ago. Eyes narrowed on my face, Gage said slowly,
"You must have been young when you got married, or you weren't married very long."
I took another sip of tea and wished I'd told him to mind his own business. Both. I was young, just finished nursing school. I was working my first job in the ER when he came in with a broken arm. We were only married 3 years.
It wasn't good?
He asked, his words so gentle they drew tears to my eyes. It hadn't been good. It had been very, very bad, and I wasn't going to tell Gage Winters about any of it. I shook my head, my eyes on my tea.
Have you talked to anyone about it? A friend? Or a therapist?
I almost laughed at the irony of Gage asking me that question. Blinking away the moisture in my eyes, I met his gaze and challenged, "Have you?" Gage looked away. I wasn't surprised. I could fall back on the easy explanation that macho guys like Gage didn't want to talk about their feelings. But the truth was, a lot of people didn't like to talk about their feelings. I wasn't beating down the door of the closest therapist to spill my guts about my horrible marriage. Both of us knew better. I was a nurse, for heaven's sake. I knew exactly why I wasn't able to sleep, and I knew that therapy would probably help. Still, 2 years had passed since Anthony had died and set me free. I'd managed to sell our house and move away. I'd had 4 different jobs with different families until I'd ended up at Winter's house, and during none of that time had I made a single appointment with a therapist. Gage surprised me when he said,
"I know I should. I have a buddy who went through a bad time after an IED blew up under his caravan. Some of the guys gave him shit for it. But he said talking to someone helped."
I drank the rest of my tea in 3 long gulps and set the mug in the sink. "I'd better get to bed," I said. I moved to walk past Gage when he stopped me with a hand on my arm.
"Sophie, you know you're safe here, right?"
Surprised that he could read me so well, I looked up expecting to see compassion or sympathy in his blue eyes. I didn't expect heat. Interest. The desire in his eyes was at odds with his gentle question. Testing him, I asked quietly, "Am I?" Gage tightened his hand on my arm and drew me closer until my breasts brushed his hard chest. We were separated by inches of fabric, his t-shirt, my robe, and my nightgown beneath. My body didn't care. My nipples tightened, and my breath grew short. Gage dropped his head until his lips brushed my temple. His hold on my arm loosened, his hand stroking up and down, fingers circling my wrist, then letting go to slide to my elbow before trailing down again. The warmth of his fingers, even through the sleeve of my robe, was soothing. Soothing and something else. Something dangerous that sparked my nerves and set my heart beating faster. His breath brushing my skin, smelling of honey and whiskey, he whispered into my ear, "You'll always be safe with me, Sophie. I promise." His hand left my arm and he took a step back. If he was waiting for me to speak, he was going to be disappointed. I had no idea what to say. I was a coward. Crossing my arms over my chest, I whispered a hasty, "Good night," and fled the kitchen. For a second, my breasts pressed to his chest, his mouth at my temple. I'd been sure he was going to kiss me. I'd wanted him to. I wanted Gage Winters to kiss me. I don't think I needed to list all the reasons kissing Gage Winters was a terrible idea. Laying in bed staring at the ceiling, I did it anyway. First, I worked for his family. Second, third, and fourth, he was newly home, was working through a trauma, and was in no position to start a relationship. Fifth, I didn't do one-night stands. Sixth, I had pretty much 0 sexual experience. Anthony had been my first, and sex with him had been brief and dull. I was pretty sure sex involved more than laying there with my eyes closed, but that's what Anthony wanted from his wife. I'd learned quickly to give Anthony what he wanted. Gage Winters would expect more than an untutored girl in his bed. At that thought, I stopped listing all the reasons kissing Gage Winters was a bad idea. It was too depressing. Instead, against my better judgment, I imagined kissing Gage Winters. That lower lip, full and soft, the way he looked at me, the heat in his blue eyes, When he'd pulled me against him, my nipples had gone tight, and warmth had gathered in my belly and between my legs. I hadn't felt desire for a man since my wedding night. Years had passed, and my body had been dry and disinterested. Sex was something other people enjoyed, not me. All I had to do was think about kissing Gage, and my body came to life. That couldn't be good. I was not going to sleep with my employer's cousin. I wasn't. I wasn't going to kiss him. I wasn't going to flirt. I was going to be completely professional and appropriate, just like I always was. That didn't mean I couldn't daydream about it. Rolling over and wrapping my arms around my pillow, I smiled to myself in the dark. I wasn't going to kiss Gage Winters, but knowing that I wanted to, that my body could still feel desire for a man, that was a relief on a level so deep I couldn't fully process it. I just let the knowledge slide through me. I wanted to kiss Gage Winters, and in my dreams, I would.
Chapter 4 Gage. I slept late the next morning. I'd fallen asleep with the scent of Sophie in my nose, sweet and sultry and out of reach. Just being near her was soothing. She had an inner calm, a strength about her, beneath the gentle exterior. When I was with her, something deep inside me relaxed, even as other parts of me came to life. The sound of her voice eased my mind, but being near her woke my body. I was starting to love that shapeless, bulky cotton robe. It showed absolutely nothing. But when I'd pulled her against me, and those soft breasts had pillowed against my chest, it had taken every ounce of restraint I possessed to content myself with stroking my fingers down her arm. She probably knew I wanted to kiss her. Any other woman, and I might have. I wasn't sure if I held back because I was afraid to scare her off or because I didn't want to take advantage of a woman who was essentially an employee in my home. I hadn't hired her. Aiden had. Still, it was a fine and fuzzy line, one I was sure Sophie was acutely aware of. I'd meant what I said. She was safe in Winter's house. Safe with me. I wanted to kiss her. I wanted to strip off that robe and get my hands all over the soft curves beneath. The flush in her cheeks when I'd pulled her to me, the way her breath caught in her chest. I wanted that. I wanted more. I just had to figure out how to swing it. It felt good to have a project aside from getting my life back in order. I couldn't remember the last time I'd been this interested in a woman. In getting laid, sure. Who wasn't interested in getting laid? This wasn't so simple. I didn't just want to fuck Sophie and leave her. For one thing, we were living in the same house. A one-night stand was essentially impossible. And not to knock anonymous sex, because anonymous sex could be great. But Sophie was more than that. Just the sound of her voice was enough to calm something inside me I couldn't reach myself. I wanted her in bed, no question, but almost as much as that. I simply wanted to be with her. When had I ever wanted conversation with a woman almost as much as I wanted to fuck her? The last thing I needed was one more problem to solve. But the challenge of Sophie felt less like a burden and more like a puzzle. I could be patient, but I would figure her out. I already knew she was skittish about men after her marriage. It was probably for the best that she hadn't wanted to talk about it. I needed some time to get used to the idea that she'd been married to a man who had, at the least, left her so tied up in knots she couldn't sleep. How he'd done that, I'd find out from her eventually. I wasn't going to push. There wasn't any doubt in my mind that he'd hurt her one way or another. There'd been such relief in her eyes when she told me he was dead. It had been a punch to the gut. I'd take my time with Sophie, give her the space she needed. But she'd decide she wanted me as much as I wanted her. I refused to doubt that. I took a quick shower and jogged down the stairs. With her exceptional radar, Mrs. W. met me in the front hall. A regretful expression on her face as she informed me that I'd missed breakfast and Abel, the cook, was out at the market. I started to shrug and reassure her I could wait until lunch when she said she'd just served tea and a snack in the living room for Sophie and Aunt Amelia. I shot Mrs. W. a grin that had her smiling back before I turned to the open double doors of the formal living room. Voices came from inside. Sophie's and Amelia's. No one else. A quick check over my shoulder told me that Mrs. W. had disappeared, leaving me alone in the front hall. A furtive glance into the room revealed Sophie and Amelia at the far end, side by side on a couch by the fireplace. Sophie's lap was covered with some kind of white netting. A stack of ribbons lay over one knee. Wedding stuff. Amelia sipped tea from the tray on the table in front of them. They hadn't spotted me or heard my conversation with Mrs. W., probably because they were bickering good-naturedly over the tea tray. I leaned against the wall beside the open door and eavesdropped. "Hand me another cookie from the tray, would you?" Amelia asked. "No more cookies. We'll see what we're having for lunch. Depending on how it will affect your blood sugar, maybe you can have another cookie then." A suspicious silence. Then I thought I caught the sound of skin striking skin. In an indignant voice, Amelia said, "Did you just smack my hand?" In a calm, low tone, Sophie said, "I told you, no more cookies." "You can't spank me like I'm a toddler." "Then don't act like one," Sophie said, a thread of amusement weaving through her words. "Why don't you let me talk to Abel about trying some of the low-sugar dessert recipes I found?" "Low sugar is like low fat. Might as well not have it at all," Amelia grumbled. I wouldn't argue with that sentiment. I tended to agree. It sounded like Sophie did as well because she sighed and said, "I know it stinks, but this is reality, Amelia, and you have to deal with it." "I don't know why Charlie had to hire such a sensible nurse," Amelia grumbled again, but I could hear the affection in her voice. To my surprise, Sophie giggled and said, "Probably because the family was afraid you'd burn down the house. I shuddered to think what you would have gotten up to if you had a nurse who was as much of a troublemaker as you are." "Well, Charlie always was a clever girl," Amelia admitted, making Sophie giggle again. I wished I could see her face when she laughed like that. It made her smooth, low voice sound like a mountain stream, clean and light, like joy made real. I almost stepped into the room, but her giggles faded and I stayed where I was to hear more. Amelia went on. "She's extra clever since she has you helping out with the wedding. Doesn't she know you're my nurse, not her wedding slave?" "You could help too," Sophie said. "I'd love to, but, you know, my arthritis." I pictured Amelia holding her age-spotted hands in the air as evidence. Just like with the cookie, Sophie didn't let her get away with anything. "You don't have arthritis, Amelia Winters, and Charlie isn't the only Winters who's clever. I've never had a patient who kept me on my toes as much as you." "Hey, I'm not just a patient. I'm your friend." "And it's a good thing we are friends," Sophie said with mock seriousness. "If I didn't like you so much, I might have already smothered you in your sleep." This time Amelia was the one who dissolved into giggles. I loved hearing that almost as much as Sophie's laugh. Amelia had always been a prankster, the one dependably fun adult in a sea of proper grown-ups. The last 15 years had been as hard on her as it had on the rest of us, but for different reasons. While we'd been dealing with losing our parents, she'd watched as a terminal illness had slowly taken the love of her life. By the end, we'd worried we'd lose Amelia, too. It was good to have her home and happy once again. The heavy front door of Winter's house swung open, and Charlie stepped inside, as if conjured by Sophie and Amelia's conversation. Dressed in worn jeans and a faded gray t-shirt, her auburn hair a mess of waves and curls that suited her to perfection, she started across the hall to the living room, a smile spreading across her face as she spotted me. I held up a finger to my lips and met her before she got to the living room doors, turning her down the hall to the library. "Why were you hovering outside the living room?" she asked, giving me a sideways glance. "Without shame," I said. "I was eavesdropping. Are you here to do wedding stuff with Amelia and Sophie?"
"Just for an hour or so."
Sophie offered to help. She is an absolute angel. I don't know what Lucas and I were thinking trying to throw a wedding together in 6 weeks, she said, tucking a curl behind her ear. "How complicated can it be?" I asked. "It's 100 people, and you're getting married at the house." Charlie elbowed me in the ribs and made an annoyed sound in the back of her throat.
"Shows what you know. I've got a wedding planner to help, but there's just so much to do. I'm kind of wishing we'd decided to elope."
"Not unless you take the rest of us with you," I warned.
"Yeah, I know. It just seemed like this would be so much simpler when we decided on a Christmas wedding. I didn't realize how many details were involved."
"Too late now," I teased, leading her into the library and shutting the doors behind us.
"What's up?" Charlie asked, setting down her tote bag stuffed full of fabric samples, magazine clippings, and notebooks.
"I need a favor," I said, not sure what Charlie's response would be. Charlie and I had always gotten along well, but she'd been 10 years old when I left home. We were never tight the way she was with Aiden. Typical of Charlie's determination and open heart, she shoved her hands in her back pockets and said,
"Anything."
My family was grateful I was home and alive. I wasn't above using that to my advantage. I sat in one of the leather armchairs, propped my ankle on my knee, and leaned forward. Charlie took a seat in the chair opposite me, curling her legs beneath her. "I want to go back to work," I said. Charlie's eyes flared with surprise, but she said nothing. I went on. "Aiden's not ready to have me at Winter's Inc. He won't talk to me about coming back. He won't talk to me about anything." The last part was hard to admit. Aiden and I had always been closer than cousins, closer than most brothers. I owed him. I knew it. But I couldn't start paying him back if he wouldn't even talk to me. Charlie's eyes were guarded as she said,
"Do you want me to talk to him?"
I shook my head. "No, Charlie, but thanks. Aiden and I have to work this out ourselves."
"Then what do you want me to do?"
"I know you're not working at the company anymore," I said. "But you still know almost everything about Winter's Inc. A hell of a lot more than I do after being gone over a decade. I have a lot of catching up to do. I know you're busy with the wedding and with the house you and Lucas just bought, but if you could find some time here and there to get me up to speed, I'd appreciate it." Charlie's words were careful when she spoke.
"You know all of my information is 6 months out of date."
"It's a lot more accurate than mine," I countered. "I'm headed out today to get a new phone, laptop, everything I need to get back into normal life. I've kept up with the company on a superficial level, but if I'm going back to work, I need a much deeper grasp of the company's holdings, plans for expansion, everything. I can do a lot of the research on my own, but I need your help, Charlie." Charlie leaned forward and braced her elbows on her knees. Her ocean blue eyes were intent when they met mine.
You need to give Aiden time, she said. I know, I started to say, but Charlie cut me off. This isn't a guilt trip, honestly. I was too young when my parents died to judge anyone else. But Aiden was so alone after you left. He needed you. All this time he understood why you were gone, but he's missed you so much. And then we thought you were dead. Charlie blinked and swallowed hard. On and off over the years, I'd felt guilty for leaving, but never as much as I did just then. I was a selfish fucking asshole who'd abandoned my family. I sighed. I don't know how to make it up to him, I said. To all of you. But I'm home now, and I'm not leaving again. Not leaving would be a start, Charlie agreed. I'm just trying to say be patient with Aiden. He wants you here, and I know he wants you back at Winters Inc. He does. He just needs time. We've got time. And I don't expect him to hand me one of the executive suites. I'm not looking for your old job. I'm not remotely qualified at the moment. I got a degree in economics while I was in the Army, and I started my MBA, but then my schedule got unreliable, and I had to put the MBA on hold. I wasn't thinking about coming home back then, so it didn't seem like a big deal. I'm going to look into transferring into a program here, but I haven't walked through the doors of Winters Inc. in over a decade. I suddenly felt like I was in a job interview. Charlie studied me thoughtfully. For a minute, I thought she was going to turn me down. I would have understood if she had. Aiden was pissed at me, and Charlie adored Aiden. She loved all of us, but Aiden had practically raised her. Then, surprising me, she leaned back in the armchair and grinned. Did anyone ever tell you why I left Winters Inc.? She asked. I realized no one had. No. I guess I just assumed you were tired of the corporate life and wanted something new, I said. An explosive laugh burst from Charlie. She wrapped her arms around her stomach and bent forward, her shoulders shaking with the force of her mirth. When she had her breath back, she said, Oh, hell no. I was working 80 hours a week. I had zero life. A lot like Aiden, actually. He kept telling me to slow down, stop working so much. But there was so much to do, and I didn't want to leave him alone with the company. I know. I'm sorry, I started to say, guilt a heavy weight in my gut when Charlie laughed again and waved her hand in the air, dismissing my apology. Not the point, she said. So one day he calls me into his office, sits me down, and fires me. Fucking fires me. Complete with security escorting me from the fucking building. A giggle escaped, and Charlie wiped away a tear. I stared at her, dumbfounded. He can't fire you, I protested. You have an equal share of stock in the company, and you worked your ass off. You could have gone to the board and... I know... But I wasn't going to go to war with Aiden over my job. The bitch of it was, I never liked working for Winters Inc. I only did it because I thought I should, because I thought it was what Aiden wanted. And Aiden fired me because he thought it was what was best for me. Bossy asshole. That was why you stole his whiskey, I said, putting the pieces together. Charlie grinned again. So totally worth it, she said. And that was when I met Lucas, so it all worked out. But I haven't forgotten Aiden turning my life upside down because he thought he knew what was best for me. I owe him one. So you'll help me? I'll help you, Charlie agreed. I know you're busy, with the wedding and everything. If you want to wait until after the holidays, we can do that. I didn't want to wait. I wanted to start taking my life back right away. To my relief, Charlie shook her head. A lot of what you have to do, you'll do on your own anyway. Just off the top of my head, I can think of piles of research you need to get through. You can review what I give you, and then we'll go over it together. By the time I'm done with you, Aiden won't be able to put you off anymore. He needs you back at the company, even if he doesn't want to admit it. This time, I know what's good for him, and he's going to suck it up whether he likes it or not. I got up from the armchair. Charlie stood with me, and I pulled her into my arms, kissing the top of her head. "Thanks, sweetheart," I said. Her arms wrapped around me and squeezed tight. "We all missed you so much, Gage. I know things are crazy right now, with the weddings and the holidays and Aiden being an ass, but we're so glad you're home." "Me too," I said, speaking the truest words that had ever passed between my lips. Not a day had gone by that I didn't miss my family, miss Winter's house. Wrapping my arms around Charlie's shoulder, I turned us to the door of the library. My stomach growled, and I hoped there was enough of whatever was on the tea tray Mrs. W. had brought Sophie and Amelia to tide me over until lunch. An idea occurred to me. A fucking brilliant idea. And I said, "Give me a job." "Wedding stuff," I clarified. "I'm not doing anything else right now, other than whatever homework you have for me. So let me help with the wedding." Charlie stopped dead in the doorway of the library and stared at me, her blue eyes wide, brimming with amusement and relief. "You want to help with the wedding? Even Lucas doesn't want to help with the wedding. Doesn't Lucas have a new job? And you guys bought a new flip house. Sounds like he's got his hands full." Charlie slipped her arm through mine, and we started toward the living room again. "He does. He seriously does. And he's not a wedding stuff kind of guy. Not that you are either, but if you're willing to help, I'll take it. The wedding planner squeezed us in last minute after I begged, and she doesn't have time to manage everything the way she normally does. I've got lists coming out my ears. I don't know why coordinating a renovation feels like fun, and throwing together a wedding is making me crazy, but it is. We probably should have waited, but we just wanted to be married." "Consider me at your disposal, then," I said, as we walked into the living room. Helping Charlie with her wedding would ease some of my guilt at asking her for her time when she was slammed with her own commitments. That it would give me an excuse to be near Sophie was just a bonus. Chapter 5. Gage. We strolled into the living room, arm in arm, to find a small plate of sandwiches and a fresh pot of hot water on the tea tray. Amelia looked up to see us, and her face brightened. "The battle axe said you were coming to raid our tea tray." Charlie and I sat on the couch opposite the one where Sophie and Amelia had set up camp, the tea tray on a coffee table between us. The gas fireplace had warmed that end of the room with a cozy glow. Winter's house was filled with light, even on a gray December day, but the heat of the fireplace was welcome. I helped myself to one of the small sandwiches. Charlie fixed two cups of tea, one for her and one for me, saying to Sophie and Amelia, "Gage said he would help with the wedding stuff." "Did he?" Amelia asked, raising an eyebrow at me. I grinned at her. Mostly, I was trying not to stare at Sophie. She sat beside Amelia, her lap covered by a towel, on top of which she had a stack of white netting, a pile of pink ribbons, and a bowl of what looked like birdseed. She was filling the squares of netting with the birdseed and tying them into neat little bundles. I had no clue what they were for, and I was pretty sure I didn't want to know. My plan was to do what I was told and take every opportunity to get closer to Sophie while I was at it. I'd never seen her during the day. In her neatly buttoned camp shirt, her silvery blonde hair pulled back into a tight braid, she shouldn't have looked tempting. I'll admit to the tiniest flash of disappointment that she wasn't wearing a nurse's uniform. Not that I really would have expected her to. No one who worked in the house wore a uniform. Not these days. I had childhood memories of the head housekeeper in a starched black dress covered with a white apron, the day maids in similar outfits of gray and white, gardeners wearing dark green shirts and khaki pants. When my Uncle Hugh had taken over the house, he cut back on the staff. I remember him telling my dad that times had changed and a full staff no longer made sense. So, no Sophie in a nurse's uniform. Probably for the best. I was having a hard enough time resisting her as it was, despite the bulky, shapeless robe she wore at night and the boxy, short-sleeved, button-down camp shirt she had on right now. As far as I could tell, she wasn't wearing much makeup, if any. She didn't need it. Her green eyes were fringed with thick, pale lashes, her cheeks and lips a rosy pink. I was staring at her lips when the sound of someone saying my name cut into my distraction. I blinked and looked up to see Amelia watching me with a knowing gaze. To cover, I grabbed another small sandwich and said, "Yeah." "I asked you what you thought," Amelia said, and I sensed a trap in her words. Cautious, I said, "About what?" "I want Charlie to set Sophie up," Amelia said, her brown eyes sparkling with mischief. Normally I found Amelia's antics entertaining, but just then I wanted to shake her and send her to her room. Trying to act casual, I said, "Set her up with who?" Charlie was watching me with curious eyes. Sophie's cheeks had flushed a deep pink, and her gaze was fixed on the ball of netting-wrapped birdseed in her lap.
"No one in particular," Charlie said. "Sophie says she doesn't want me to set her up with anyone, and I think we should respect her wishes."
She sent Amelia a hard look we all knew Amelia would ignore. Proving us right, Amelia said,
"Sophie's been moldering around this old heap long enough with only an old lady and Aiden for company. She's been a widow for 2 years. If she doesn't get back out there, she'll end up all alone."
I noticed that Sophie had no trouble standing up to Amelia on the subject of cookies, but was oddly silent as Amelia tried to organize her life. Charlie cut in with,
"When Sophie decides she wants to date, if she wants me to fix her up, I will."
Slanting Sophie a grin, she said,
"Lucas has some definite prospects on his new team. Smart and hot. Really. When you decide you want to date, you let me know."
Sophie's cheeks just flamed hotter. She retied the same bow for the third time, her fingers shaking a little. As Amelia urged Charlie to call Lucas now, I leaned forward and said to Sophie, "Do you want them to leave you alone?" I wasn't prepared for the sheer relief that washed through me at Sophie's quick nod. My gut had twisted into a knot at the idea of Charlie setting Sophie up with one of Lucas's hacker commandos. I knew who Lucas was, and I knew the type he'd have on his team. Charlie wasn't far off. They'd be smart as hell and in killer shape. I didn't want a single one of them anywhere near Sophie. Sophie was mine. And no one, not even me, was going to push her into anything she wasn't ready for. Sitting back, I waited for Amelia and Charlie to stop bickering before I cut in and said, "Drop it." Charlie immediately turned her attention to the tote bag of wedding stuff at her side. Amelia glared at me mutinously.
"It's none of your business," she said.
"It's none of yours either," I shot back. "Meddle in someone else's life. You've got a whole family here to irritate. Leave Sophie alone."
"Fine,"
Amelia conceded. Looking at Sophie, she said,
"I just don't want you to be lonely. You're stuck with me all the time, and you never go out."
The blush in her cheeks had faded some when Sophie looked up at Amelia and said,
"I'm not lonely. This is the least lonely I've been in years, I promise. And I like being stuck with you all the time. Being with you is fun, even when I'm worried you're going to get me fired with one of your pranks.
At that, Charlie laughed.
Amelia's pranks aren't going to get you fired, Sophie. We might kick her out, but we'll keep you.
Amelia harumphed. And that's why you're my second favorite great-niece.
I'm your favorite and you know it, Charlie said,
unfolding a binder on her lap and scanning down the list.
At least until Annalise comes home. Then you'll love best whichever one of us is causing the most trouble.
You're both my favorite great-nieces, Amelia said with an affectionate smile at Charlie.
We're your only great-nieces, Charlie interrupted wryly.
But after stealing Aiden's whiskey, you're my favorite.
For now, Amelia finished.
Charlie cleared her throat and started going through her wedding list. I tried to focus on what needed to be done, but my eyes kept wandering to the curve of Sophie's lower lip, wondering what she would taste like, and if she'd let me kiss her. By the time Charlie was done with the wedding meeting, I had a to-do list and a hard-on. I managed to escape the living room while the three women talked about Charlie's dress, saying something about running errands. I loved Charlie, but I didn't care about her wedding dress, and I had to get moving. I needed a phone, computer, tablet, and a new wardrobe. It was a lot to tackle in one day, but I wasn't a fan of shopping. Better to knock it all out at once. Before I left, I made a few of the phone calls on Charlie's list and set up meetings with a photographer and two musicians. Charlie had narrowed down the choices and said she trusted me to make the final decisions. After that, it was quick work to get the electronics I needed, and much longer to restock my wardrobe. I was having enough trouble convincing Aiden to let me through the doors of Winter's Inc. A closet full of cargo pants and faded t-shirts would not help my case. My brother Vance had directed me to a store in Buckhead that didn't exist when I last lived in Atlanta. They carried everything from jeans to the highest quality suits, did custom tailoring on site, and were happy to serve me a beer while a helpful sales assistant showed me my options. Not long after I'd been handed my beer, Vance showed up, strolling in with his blonde hair tied back with a twist of metal he'd probably picked up from the floor of his studio. As always, Vance drew the eye. Female and a few male heads turned as he tracked me down in the back of the store. He threw himself into the armchair next to mine, sent a saleswoman a wink when she offered him a beer, and said, "So, how weird is it to be home?" I shook my head in response. Weird didn't begin to cover it. I wasn't going to try to explain sitting in public, so I just said, "It's going to take a while to settle in." "Doesn't help with all the crazy shit going on," Vance said. "Why Tate and Charlie decided to get married in the same week is beyond me." "I got the feeling the rush to the altar wasn't so much Charlie as Lucas," I said. Not that Charlie was resisting. She was head over heels for Lucas Jackson. I'd only met him once, the night I got home, but from the way he looked at her, I'd say he was just as crazy about Charlie. "He waited 6 months to put a ring on her finger," Vance grumbled. "But as soon as she said yes, boom, wedding." "It's not like you waited much longer to marry Maggie," I said. Vance's blue eyes warmed, and a secret smile played across his mouth. "I had to lock that woman down before she got a better offer," he said. "Yeah, more likely you wanted to marry her before you had a chance to fuck it up again."
"That too," Vance agreed easily. "You doing anything after this?"
"No plans. Why?"
"Come over for lunch," Vance said. "I told Maggie I'd pick something up. Ella, she helps us with Rosie, is working all day today, and she's taking Rosie to the park, so we can have an actual, uninterrupted adult meal."
Vance gave me a sidelong look.
"You're probably used to those."
I thought about the last 6 months, spent mostly locked in a tiny cage with a dirt floor. Uninterrupted, yes. Meals, not as many as I was used to.
My captors had been a lot better with the torture than they had been about feeding me. I didn't say anything about that to Vance. This wasn't the place, and I wasn't sure I wanted to talk about it with my little brother anyway. I didn't want to talk about it with anyone. Instead, I said, "Lunch would be great." Vance stuck around until I was done, offering his opinion when he thought it was needed. It would have annoyed me, but Vance always had better taste in clothes than I did, especially after I had spent more than a decade in some form of uniform. I loaded the back of the car I'd borrowed from Aiden with my purchases and followed Vance to the restaurant where he picked up his takeout order, then on to the home he shared with Maggie and Buckhead, not far from Winter's house. Magnolia Henry had inherited the Henry family house from her grandmother, and it looked like she'd taken good care of it. It was smaller in scale than Winter's house. Most homes were, even in Buckhead. The white house sat in the corner of several sprawling acres, and despite the gray winter skies, it looked warm and welcoming. Vance led me in the front door, pausing to kick off his shoes and nudge a brightly colored plastic train out of the way before leading me back to the kitchen. Chapter 6. Gage. Maggie emerged from the hallway at the front of the house. I didn't know her well. I knew of her, but she was younger than me and had gone to school in England, her path not crossing with the Winters family until Vance had hired her a few years before. If you asked me what kind of woman Vance would marry, I never would have picked Maggie. Before her, Vance went for easy and flashy. In all things. His life had been about partying, working, and fucking, in that order. He'd had a drinking problem, one we'd been at a loss to deal with until he dragged himself to rehab and turned his life around. Lucky he had, because a year after he got sober, the infant daughter he didn't know he'd fathered was dropped on his doorstep. If you'd told me that was coming, I would have sworn Vance wasn't father material. But he fell in love with his daughter at first sight. He'd confessed on one of my short visits home that he'd been after Maggie for years. But it took the combination of sobriety and baby Rosalie to turn her head in his direction. Maggie wasn't flashy, and she definitely wasn't a party girl. She was smart, with a warm, open heart and the kind of timeless beauty that said she would be just as gorgeous at 70 as she was in her 20s.
"Vance, you brought Gage home," she said
as she padded into the kitchen in bare feet, at odds with the neatly tailored suit she wore. She gave me a quick hug and kiss on the cheek before abandoning me to slide into her husband's arms. Vance buried his face in Maggie's red hair, one hand sneaking up to deftly pull out the pin securing her elegant twist.
"How was the meeting?" he murmured.
Maggie kissed the side of his neck before she pulled away and plucked her hairpins from his hand.
"I didn't like their numbers," she said. "We can talk about it later. I'm going to run upstairs and change."
I watched Maggie leave, grinning when Vance said,
"Hey, stop checking out my wife's ass."
"Your wife has a great ass. It would be rude not to appreciate it." Vance grinned back at me. Together, we unpacked the takeout containers and set the table. I'd missed this. Missed my family. Once, we'd all been so close. The rest of them had held on to that closeness, but both Annalise and I had run away. Annalise had her reasons, and hers were better than mine. A lot better. I was done with running, and I was glad to have my family back. Watching Vance with Maggie, it was a relief to know my brother had found love after so many years of misery. He looked younger than when he'd been drinking, fit and tan, vibrantly alive. Happy. I didn't leave Vance and Maggie's until late afternoon. After I unpacked my things, I hit the gym to get in a workout before dinner. Aiden was absent for the meal again. I pretended we didn't miss him. We didn't. Really. Dinner with Sophie and Amelia was like watching a play. Amelia was the comic relief, Sophie the straight man.
They kept me laughing until dessert was served. The scowl on Amelia's face at the sight of the bowl of chopped fruit in front of her was no joke. She ate the fruit, but she and Sophie bickered over it the entire time, Sophie reminding her she'd had too many cookies earlier in the day, and Amelia insisting she didn't care. I'd already realized Sophie cared about Amelia, treated her more as a friend than a patient. But that only made her more resolved to safeguard Amelia's health. Amelia could be demanding, insistent, and never shied away from drama. But she was no match for Sophie's steady, resolute nature. Sophie absorbed Amelia's outbursts, listened patiently to her complaints, and quietly refused to change her mind. When Amelia grumbled, Sophie commiserated. My family was made up of strong-willed women, most of whom never shied away from confrontation. In her own way, Sophie fit right in. She was quieter than the Winters women, but watching her over the past few days, I'd learned that beneath that calm exterior, Sophie hid a will of steel. After dinner, Sophie and Amelia took over the family room to watch a few episodes of a TV series they both liked. I spent a few hours unpacking my haul from the electronics store, setting up my new laptop, programming numbers into my phone, and syncing my tablet with both. I sent Charlie my new email address and number. She promised to share both with the rest of the family and to send me my first homework assignment by morning. I spent the rest of the evening reading back articles on Winters Inc., trying to catch up on anything I'd missed. There was a lot. Between my sporadic internet access and the sheer scope of Winters Inc. interests, I hadn't been able to keep up with everything in the years I'd been away. I read until my eyes burned, and the rest of the house had long since gone to sleep. I'd heard Aiden come in, his heavy tread on the stairs, pausing at the top before heading to his own suite. I wondered if he thought about popping his head in my sitting room when he'd seen a light beneath the door. I knew he needed space. Knew that for everyone else my homecoming might be enough, but not with Aiden. Never with Aiden. What I'd done to Aiden had cut too deep for that. We'd had plans, Aiden and I. Growing up, it was understood that the two of us would take over at the company for our fathers. Unlike the rest of our cousins and siblings, Aiden and I had wanted the company. We both loved it, had loved hanging out with our fathers, even as young children. After my dad died, I'd tag along with Aiden and Uncle Hugh. Some of my best memories of my dad were there along with a lot of my memories of Uncle Hugh. The company wasn't just a company, not to me. When Hugh and Olivia died, Aiden had clung to Winters Inc., shouldering the burden of the company without complaint, and had expected me to do the same. Fuck. I'd expected me to do the same. And then I hadn't. I'd woken up the morning after the funeral and been smothered by the weight of grief and guilt and loss. At the thought of taking my rightful place at the company, nausea had turned my stomach. I couldn't do it. I didn't deserve to fill my father's shoes. I'd been too young to save him and my mother. I didn't have that excuse for Uncle Hugh and Aunt Olivia. I'd been home. I'd been right in this fucking house while they were dying, and I hadn't saved them. I didn't deserve my legacy. The idea of walking through the doors of Winters Inc., of claiming my position as the heir along with Aiden, of pretending that I deserved the honor the way that he did, made me sick. I couldn't live that lie. So I'd run. Aiden had left to go back to college to finish the semester and then move home. When he'd returned to Winter's house, I hadn't been there. It was the worst betrayal either of us could have imagined. He might never forgive me. I wasn't sure I deserved forgiveness. I couldn't forgive myself. That didn't mean I was going to give up. I'd almost died in that cell a world away from home and family,
Life was precious, and I'd spent enough time being careless with my own. All those hours, with nothing more than the rats in my own thoughts for company, had forced me to see things clearly. My penance had become self-indulgence. I'd run away and joined the army to punish myself for failing to save Olivia and Hugh. Then, once I'd been gone too long, it got harder and harder to come home. To face Aiden. The rest of them forgave me easily enough. For everything. Never asked why I wouldn't come home. Never demanded to know why I hadn't saved Olivia and Hugh. I don't know that it occurred to them. They were younger and in shock. Aiden had thought about it. I'd seen the understanding in his eyes. The accusation. He'd lost his parents, and I hadn't saved them. I'll never forget the raw agony in his voice when he asked, "Where were you? Why didn't you help them?" I didn't have an answer. Not one that would satisfy him. It sure as hell didn't satisfy me. The past weighed on me. It weighed on all of us. But that was life. You can't escape where you come from. You can only chart your course for the future. I couldn't fix the past. I couldn't bring our dead back to life. And I wasn't going to let Aiden hold a grudge forever. After another hour of reading, I closed the laptop and forced myself to go to bed. I already knew I wouldn't sleep well, but I had to try. My mind drifted off after only a few minutes in bed. Drawn into dreams that twisted into nightmares. I'd only been out for an hour when I awoke, heart pounding, every nerve firing, and remembered pain so real I looked down and expected to see blood staining my sheets. I was whole and uninjured. Laying back against the sheets, I tried to calm my ragged heartbeat and steady my breath. The torture had been worse in the beginning. The first 2 months they had me, my captors had vacillated between punishing me just for being an American soldier and using me for leverage. At first, they attempted to trade me, but my mission had been so far off the books the military refused to acknowledge that I'd even been taken. Not officially. Officially, I was still back on base. That was part of the deal, and I had no resentment over it. I'd just been relieved I'd managed to get my team clear before I'd gone down. Once they realized they couldn't trade me, they'd been determined to coerce me into making one of those videos. They wanted to broadcast an American soldier renouncing his government. That wasn't going to happen. Didn't stop them from trying. I'd always had a high pain tolerance, but I fucking hated being shocked. When we were teenagers, Aiden and I had gotten our hands on a game, intended for adults, that was little more than a rubber ball with metal sensors embedded on the outside. The game was simple. Toss the ball back and forth. If you dropped the ball, you lost. The catch was in the metal sensors that delivered electric shocks at random intervals. Aiden mastered that thing like a pro. Even the strongest jolt didn't faze him. He got endless amusement out of the way I'd drop the ball at anything other than the mildest shock. The crawling, prickling sensation of electricity, the pain that wasn't pain, short-circuited something deep in my brain, something visceral. I hated it. Fucking hated it. My captors could bring out the knives and I wouldn't flinch, but that fucking car battery with the wires attached made me crazy. The nightmares were bad enough. But when they were about that fucking car battery... I rolled out of bed and headed straight for the shower, needing to wash off the cold sweat. The house was cool in the winter night, but not cold. Still, I was covered in goosebumps, the sweat slicking my body, stinking of fear. I'd had enough of these fucking nightmares.
Turning on the steaming water and stepping beneath the spray, I considered again if it was time to think about talking to someone. Was I willing to risk word getting out? And if it did,